CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Breaking news from Afghanistan. Tragedy. London Times reporting. ISIS-K suspected of attack on Afghan military hospital. 19 people dead, 50 injured. The reason I raise this is that Pakistan is a challenge not only for the region because of its long association with the Afghan Taliban and because of its, what you'd have to say, unpredictable military posture towards its neighbors. However, it is also a problem for the culture of the Republic of India. And I welcome Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, a column about how we got to a place where it is possible to tell this anecdote. Several Muslims celebrated the victory by Pakistan at cricket against India. And this led to turmoil, doubts, the kind of internecine warfare that we associate with 100 years ago. But it's not 100 years ago. It's right now. Sadanand, a very good evening to you. We need an explanation, and I believe it starts with the partition of the late 1940s and the birth of India. What happened then that is now continued by people who, they were not only not alive, their grandparents were not alive when the partition happened?
A very good evening to you, John. I think that's, you know, that's exactly the issue, that the events of history continue to cast a long shadow over the Indian subcontinent, and that even though British India was divided in 1947 into two parts, Muslim majority Pakistan, which became an Islamic Republic, and Hindu majority India, which adopted a secular constitution without a state religion, which said that all its citizens of different religions would be equal. Despite this having happened in 1947, we still have a lot of tensions. And the problem that I'm talking about over here is the conflict between Hindu nationalists in India and secular Indian nationalists. And the Hindu nationalists really view the Muslims of India, which, as you know, are 200 million strong, very large Muslim population, second largest in the world. They view them as a kind of fifth column. They view them as traitors. And they view incidents like a handful of people in Kashmir, which is a Muslim majority province in India, celebrating the Pakistani victory. They view that as proof of Muslim perfidy. And the argument that I'm making is that this maltreatment or this suspicion towards your own citizens who happen to have a different faith actually does not help India. It plays into Pakistan's hands because Pakistan was a country that was created on the basis of religion.
Basis of religion, yes, but that was decades ago. Good heavens. I understand ceremony is profound in India, but the question I come to each time I read these stories is, what's driving it? Who gains from this? Because it would seem to be undermining the prosperity that's just over the horizon for India.
So there are basically two powerful ideas that are in a, you know, they're in this contest right now in India, and it's been so for at least since the rise of Mr. Modi in 2014. On the one hand, you have the traditional Indian nationalists who have an idea of nationalism which is pretty similar to what we see in the US and the UK and Canada and other countries. It's a civic nationalism which says that anyone who was born in India, as long as you're an Indian national, it doesn't matter whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or a Sikh. It doesn't really matter. You're all equally Indian. The other competing idea is the idea of Hindu nationalism, which is very powerful for many people. And that idea says that India was an ancient Hindu land. Muslims came as invaders beginning about 1,000 years ago. And they should be viewed as essentially outsiders. Now, many Hindu nationalists say that, well, the Muslims can still live in India, but they kind of, essentially it boils down to a kind of nativism that says that, well, they've got to know their place.
So we don't start in 1947, we start 1,000 years ago for this enmity?
That's what, exactly. But Hindu nationalism as an idea only came up 100 years ago. But when it came up 100 years ago, it created also an imagined past. And its version of history was that India was a Hindu land. The Muslims came and despoiled it.
Right.
The mainstream version of Indian history that most Indians grew up with, which was the one that was espoused by Gandhi and Nehru, was that India was, you know, was a land that many people of different faiths came to and each attributed it in some way. And religion really isn't the central point. The central point was colonialism and let's all get together, whether we're Muslim or Hindu or whatever, and kick out the British. You also had the Muslim nationalists who said, well, wait a minute, we don't want to live with the Hindus. We want our own country. And those guys ended up with Pakistan. But the thing is, one third of the subcontinent's Muslims remained in India. And right now what's going on is a battle about how they should be defined and what place they should have in India.
Because your column touches on these issues, I want to introduce the possibility of outside bad actors. For example, you mentioned that a large Chinese military force is camped in the Himalayas between India and China, threateningly. At the same time, we talk about Pakistan and its motives for Afghanistan, but Pakistan is also associated with terrorist organizations that have struck at India before and can again. Does it suit Pakistan? Does it suit China to foment this anxiety? And can we eliminate them as drivers for these upsets?
No, we cannot eliminate them at all. And in fact, what I talk about in my column is how a minister, in fact, the Pakistani minister for the interior, very provocatively made a video immediately after Pakistan defeated India in this cricket match. And in that video, he said that that was a victory for Islam and said that Muslims all over the world are celebrating Pakistan's victory. And then he added very pointedly, and that includes the Muslims of India. Now, there's virtually no evidence for that. I mean, maybe there are a handful of people here or there, but most Muslims in India are Indian, and they support the Indian team. But he wanted to create that suspicion because Pakistan wants to deepen fissures in Indian society and keep India unstable. And Pakistan's iron brother, China, which is squatting on the border with tens of thousands of troops, would obviously welcome that also.
Narendra Modi is a successful prime minister. He's been reelected. He has an apparatus that stretches across the land. I understand there are things to say that are positive and negative, but at COP26, he's delighted everyone by making a pledge for India and net zero sometime later in the 21st century. This is India as a power, as a geopolitical power. I don't understand how that's possible unless this Muslim anxiety is solved. Does Narendra Modi's government, I understand he's associated with the BJP, and that is Hindu nationalism at some point. Does his government see that solving this enmity is critical if they're going to solve large global problems like climate change?
John, I think you've placed your finger on the heart of the problem. This is the single biggest problem India is going to have to grapple with in the years and decades ahead. Can it fulfill its potential on the global stage if its domestic political arrangements are marked by conflict and turmoil? And that's why they have to come up with an answer. And I'm not saying that this is easy. I know that, you know, countries all over the world, we like to say that diversity is our strength. I think diversity sometimes can be our strength if it's managed right. But diversity, if it's managed poorly or if politicians and leaders make bad decisions, it can become a huge weakness for a country. And so this is the challenge that Modi faces, because his party wins elections by playing up these divisions. But if he wants India to be a strong power and he wants to be seen as a strong leader on the global stage, he has to find a way to tamp down these divisions.
We began with the report of an ISIS attack in Afghanistan. Does ISIS, which is a transnational terrorist organization, does it worry India? Is India on guard now after the disorder of Afghanistan in these last months?
Yes, but I don't think it's as much about this or that organization. I think one of the problems we have is when we discuss radical Islam generally is that we tend to get too caught up in the, you know, org chart, right? Like we talk about different organizations and which splinter group and which faction. The fact is that what is threatening to India is the same thing that is threatening to the democratic West. It's the ideology of radical Islam and the violent terrorism that emanates from it. And whether it's ISIS-K or Lashkar-e-Taiba or Jaish-e-Mohammed or Hizbul Mujahideen, all of these are manifestations of the same radical ideology. And it's certainly something that India faces, and it could face it. I argue in my column, the challenge could become much, much stronger if it in fact continues to alienate Muslims for no good reason, for example, by arresting people for cheering some side in a cricket match.
Sadanand Dume, a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, American Enterprise Institute, writing about India and Pakistan again, India and Muslims and Hindus again. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.